Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude!
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, thanks for a great party last night.
Dude, you're welcome.
Mike throws his annual white elephant party. I was thrilled to get the invite. You know, sometimes I'm never sure. Depends on Mike's mood, whether or not I'm allowed to come over for social engagements or if it's just for the podcast.
It is very exclusive, this party.
Usually we just have a working relationship, not a social relationship. So we find that kind of muddies our business here, which is podcasting and talking mediocre hockey, which is what's happening in San Jose right now.
Exactly right.
But I was vowed to go to the party, dude, and I brought a gift, my white elephant gift, and you selected it.
I picked it, and I didn't know you brought it, and it was awesome. It was a Justin Bieber singing toothbrush and a pregnancy test.
That's right. Well, they go hand in hand.
Yes. It's like kibbles and bits.
Everyone who uses a Justin Bieber toothbrush does get pregnant.
And the funny thing was, is someone actually stole it from me. And
I know. Someone wanted it.
I know. And I ended up with something else. So
what'd you end up with?
I ended up with Superman underwear.
But what was the... Tell me about the process of getting to the underwear.
Well, the thing was, I took some other stuff, but there was the one coveted gift. There's always one coveted gift every year, right?
Yeah.
And so this year it was the book written by Carrie Fraser.
Yeah.
Because another one of my friends, I think he was actually, I don't know who brought that gift.
Yeah. I think I know who brought it, but
yeah, I don't know who brought it for sure. But anyway, it was stolen several times. My wife picked it first, and you said to me as soon as she saw it, you said, "There's a 0% chance she's keeping that."
and that's true.
That's true.
I took it, and then you took it from me.
And then you took it back.
And I took it right back from you. So I do have that book, and I've read it already, dude.
No way.
No.
Okay. Right. Yeah, that'd be amazing.
In 18 hours, I managed to read an entire book. Well, that would be possible.
Sure.
It would mean you wouldn't have much of a life.
Well, then it would be very possible.
It's very busy Sunday, dude. I went to Costco.
You didn't read the Carrie Fraser book?
Not yet. It's on my to-do list.
Yeah.
Well, dude, I guess we should get to the matter at hand. You know, we're fresh off of a loss last night to St. Louis. We had a win at home against Dallas. And then a loss to Minnesota.
Right.
I blanked on it there for a second. That's how mind-numbing that game was.
Yes.
Gosh, dude, I don't even know if I feel like getting into the specifics of these three games. I'm more looking at the big picture here, dude.
Well, which one of those two losses, which one was more frustrating for you?
The Minnesota loss.
Yeah, without a doubt. Because the Sharks just absolutely dominant. What, they have 8 shots in the first minute of the game or something?
Yeah, it was a dominant performance for the first half of the period. And then...
They gave up
They gave up the... Were they both on the power play, dude?
No, you know, only the second one was.
The second goal on the power play, the first one... that was Torrey Mitchell's penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude, it was so frustrating because you could see that they were better than Minnesota, and watching them play, and then Minnesota gets the upper hand, and then that's it.
They just shut it down.
They just shut it down, dude.
At that point, yeah.
Shut it down, and this is where I'm getting into sort of a big picture discussion, is watching that game and watching last night's game and seeing how the coaching staff and the players are kind of responding this week to how the Sharks are struggling right now. We've talked about this before, where when the Sharks struggle, they don't seem to make any adjustments tactically. They make adjustments by shuffling their lines around.
Right. They look for the chemistry solution as opposed to the gameplay solution.
Right. What's your take on that?
Well, I appreciate the coaching staff's confidence in their system. And I understand you don't want to have a different system for every day of the week, because if you're a jack of all trades, you're going to end up being a master of none. And one day you try playing the 1-3-1, and then the next day you're playing the left wing lock, and then the next day you're playing, run and gun. you're going to end up sort of sucking at all of those things. I get that. I don't understand how rigid they seem to be in literally not trying anything else than what they're doing, other than, like you said, shuffling lines. Because I think what you're about to say is that other teams do change their game plan depending on their opponent, and it works.
Yeah, it seems like they seem to change it specifically to stop us.
And it works.
I've watched some of these other teams play other opponents, mm-hmm. and they don't necessarily play the same style. I mean, the Blackhawks is a perfect example of that, and we're recording before the Blackhawks game, which is going to happen here in about an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. But we've seen how the Blackhawks play the Sharks. And when the Sharks beat them 1-0, I mean, it wasn't because they had a ton of offensive chances. You know, the Blackhawks just choke up the neutral zone. And I feel like that's what everybody's doing against the Sharks now, is you don't allow them to get anywhere in the middle third of the ice, mm-hmm. and you can beat them.
Right.
And I guess what irritated me the most last night was seeing for two periods Jamie McGinn and Brad Winchester with Joe Thornton, and Pavelski and Marlowe with Michael Hanzus. That really pissed me off. I couldn't believe they did that.
Right.
Why would you completely neuter yourself? And the result was a thrilling 13 shots in two periods, four shots in the first period.
Right.
Because now you've gone from, you know, maybe a line that's struggling a little bit, but it's not because they're not good.
Right.
And you're going to break them up and play them with guys that they haven't played together all year and expect that's magically going to work. I feel like we're getting dangerously close to grasping at straws.
Right.
I feel like we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. But as we've seen what's happened around the league this year.
Right.
What happened with Bruce Boudreau and how he just was trying basically anything.
Yeah.
Near the end. I don't think we're at that point, but I was not happy about that, you know, and obviously it didn't work.
Right. It's weird. And the funny thing is that I read on Puck Daddy today that the Terry Murray watch is on.
Right.
And FYI, the Kings are only 1 point behind us. You know, how much longer does this sort of slump have to continue before we might see a Puck Daddy Todd McClellan watch going on here?
I'm not necessarily sure that's the solution.
Yeah.
Because I think when you do that, you know, you're either going to see what happened with the Caps and Boudreau where they're going completely forward, or you see where now Boudreau and Anaheim, they're getting worse. Like they're, mm-hmm. And you can expect that, and I'm quite happy about it, actually. And I don't expect it to go on forever, but now you've got a completely new coach, a completely new system, and now you're going backwards. You know, uprooting McClellan, unless things get really bad, is not going to be the answer. But it's not like the Sharks are plus 12 in goal differential.
Yeah, I was noticing that, too.
They've scored 73 goals, and it's not Chicago. It's not Vancouver, where they're scoring 97, 96. Mm-hmm. But they're in the middle of the pack in terms of goals scored.
Yep.
And they've played less games than some of these teams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, quite a few, actually. You know, three or four less games.
Then it looks like everybody else in the West looks like it's played either 29 or 30 games. The Sharks, when Dallas has played 28.
I don't understand it. I don't understand why you start screwing around with your top line. And the result was no goals last night, none.
Right.
And
it seems like, I remember, and I was watching the game in the third period, and there was that great sort of shot pass on the point to Pavelski. Might have been Boyle to Pavelski, and Pavelski
right.
got a good shot on net. And that was in the third period, and I pretty clearly remember Randy Hahn saying, that's the best scoring chance the Sharks have had in this entire game.
Yeah, and guess what the line was back at that point.
Right.
Now, I think Winchester was still on the top line, which... It's a cute little trick, I guess. But Brad Winchester has played several hundred NHL games, couple hundred, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he's not a top-line player, dude. This is ridiculous.
This is trying to create something out of nothing. And I'm not saying Brad Winchester is nothing, but like you said, it's a little piece of smoke and mirrors. It's a bit of magic. We need a guy to do X, and for whatever reason... Brad Winchester is the only person willing to do that? It just seems odd.
How about this headline from the St. Louis Blues beat writer? Sharks shuffle lines, kill chemistry. That's what their headline was after they beat the Sharks.
Yeah.
Sharks shuffle lines, kill chemistry. Is Patrick Marleau really a third line player? Question mark.
That's the lead.
That's their lead.
Right.
After the game. Like, they're more focused on what the Sharks did and basically commenting on what the coaching staff did.
Right.
Than their own team's good defensive effort. And Brian Elliott again playing like he's, you know, Patrick Waugh.
Well, we had a... I'm going to go to our own website now and find out which episode that was, because we had an episode called Brian Elliott is Patrick Waugh. That was episode 173. But at that point, it was supposed to be tongue-in-cheek, but the guy is leading the league in goals against average at the moment. So maybe we should start considering the fact that Brian Elliott is Patrick Waugh.
I refuse to do that.
Okay. It's becoming less and less wacky.
There are a lot of wacky things going on around the league right now.
That's
a lot of strange stuff.
And we're going to do some quarter poll stuff in this episode. I know you have a statistical argument we want to do.
Yeah.
We have an email we got to get to, dude, that's going to be very interesting to talk about. Where do we want to go here to start out? Do we want to continue venting on the recent downturn, or
yes.
do we want to move on to something else?
And let's shift gears to something else. Let's talk about the penalty kill.
Yeah.
All right. It goes hand in hand. I mean, the Sharks are middle of the pack in terms of power play. And
But they're on a huge cold streak right now, 1-for-23 or something, I think I heard.
And so they're messing around with that. They're putting Pavelski on the point.
Yeah, which is not a new thing. It's happened
for
before.
This year.
It's happened before, though. It's not completely just innovative.
I can't. The penalty kill is 28th, and I can't figure it out, dude. I can't figure out if it's.
I'll tell you why, dude.
Okay.
It sucks. That's why it's 28th.
That's right. You see how sort of clueless they look out there at times,
right?
On the penalty kill. It's not aggressive. I don't even know what to call it, dude. It's passive. It's just shifting around where the puck is. No pressure on the point, no pressure on any puck carry, no body on anyone in front of the net. It's so frustrating, dude. And to see them lose last night on a 5-on-3.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. I mean, of course. You know, that's what's going to happen. Why is the PK so bad, dude? Fix it. Fix it now, dude. Fix the penalty kill.
I wish I could. But when I look at a penalty kill and other teams, there's two sort of things that you look at. You see how aggressive they are to the puck carriers, especially at the points, right? If they rush out to the point and contest the puck at the point, then you say to yourself, okay, well, that means there might be some extra passing lanes open, right? So the Sharks clearly aren't doing that. So what they do is they don't contest the puck carrier at the point, and they let him pass. So what did that mean that team has to do? That means they have to stop the passes going through what they call the box, right? A lot of times the four players that are on the ice are sort of in a box formation. You don't want the puck going through the box between the high guy and the low guy and across ice. So what happens? The Sharks don't contest the puck, and you see passes going through the box all the time. I mean, that's
so
the one thing that
perfectly.
That just annoys the hell out of me when I see that. It's like, okay, I understand you guys want to be super passive. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I understand it. But the result of that means no dangerous passes have to happen, and they're still happening. So it's like, what is the point of that? You might as well just be aggressive if you're going to let all those passes go through. At least give the guy like 10 seconds less time to figure out something.
I guess by being passive, you're sort of daring the people on the point to score. And guess what? They are scoring. Like, that's what's happening.
Right.
You know, we saw it happen last night.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I feel like that happens, you know, I wish I could see a stat on what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, shots from the point on the Sharks when they're on the kill, they're scoring. They're scoring. And I don't know if that's a Niemi thing too, but I'm getting frustrated this week, and the PK and the line shufflings kind of brought me to the boiling point. I'm really disappointed looking at the numbers here on Behind the Net, which is a website that does hockey analytical stats. And you can see when you compare the Sharks penalty killers against guys who are supposed to be elite penalty killers on other teams, without getting into specific numbers, you know, and I see that you've got it pulled up here. So we know Dan Boyle's struggling, but he's having a wretched year on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
It really, really bad. Torrey Mitchell, isn't that supposed to be part of his job?
Right.
Dude?
He's not doing... Well, the funny thing is he's not... I sort of understand that. He's not playing very much on the penalty kill. He's playing less than a minute.
Because he sucks on the kill.
Right, so that's fine.
Well, no, it's not fine, dude. That's the point.
But it's fine if somebody sucks to not play him very much.
Right, but the point is what the hell is his purpose? Isn't he supposed to do that? Wasn't that the whole thing with Torrey Mitchell? Good penalty killer? Like 4 years ago when he was...
Right.
We were all excited about him. I'm frustrated with him. I'm frustrated with Michael Hanzus.
Especially.
This is the whole reason why we brought him here.
He's playing more than twice as much on the PK than Torrey Mitchell.
Yeah. Leads Sharks forwards in PK ice time. And, you know, on this stat, you know, goals allowed per 60 minutes on the PK, you know, it would be 11.79, which, you know,
right,
it sounds... I mean, you imagine 60 minutes of killing penalties, you
yeah,
know, 11 goals, but you compare it against, look at Maxime Talbot's, all right? Maxime Talbot leads the entire NHL in penalty kill time. You know, look at the Flyers, dude.
I'm sorry, dude.
He leads all forwards in penalty kill time. So Hanzus was almost at 12, and Maxime Talbot is at 7.
Right.
Okay. So,
and he's playing more. He's playing almost 4 minutes per game on the kill, and he's given up. He's been on the ice for 13 power play goals against. Hanzus has actually been on the ice for fewer power play goals against, but per minute he's giving up seven power play goals per 60
right,
minutes.
And Hanzus is giving up almost 12. Look at the Colorado Avalanche, dude. They have a worse PK than ours, but they have Jay McClement, who's second in the NHL in penalty kill time, and I bet you his numbers are considerably better than Michael Hanzus, 4.40. So this is, it's unacceptable, dude. So it seems like, you know, other players are being taken to task for not carrying their weight. When is Hanzus not going to start? When are they going to stop playing him the premium minutes? Because Havlat's a better PKer.
Yep.
Couture's a better PKer right now.
Marlowe.
Jumbo and Marlowe. Hanzus right now, I don't even want to see him out there.
Yeah, he's bad on the PK. Couture is considerably better. Marlowe, considerably better. I mean, Marlowe he's playing a minute and a third per 60, and he's only 3.49 goals against per 60 on the PK. That's a very, very good number. So more Marlowe, less Hanzus, I think, if you want to improve the power, if you want to improve the PK.
But they haven't been making that. Yeah.
Yeah.
They haven't been making that connection.
More Jim Vandermeer.
That, you know, Andrew Murray, I mean, yeah, that he was playing on the kill a lot at the beginning of the year. 20.93.
Yeah, well, that's because he hardly plays at all.
But, dude, like, I mean, like...
He obviously did it bad and they just pulled him.
When you're brought in here and that's supposed to be your role, I'm concerned. I'm concerned about this big picture.
Mm-hmm.
The Sharks, as of right now, have been unable to fix what was a huge problem, which is their penalty kill. It's a problem. And if it's going to go like this, dude, it's bad news.
Yeah. I don't see how you could be anywhere close to going deep in the playoffs if you have a power play this bad.
No. And Chicago's in the same boat as us. So they're scoring a ton more goals than we are.
Mm-hmm.
But their kill is as bad as ours.
And yeah. Doesn't bode well for either team, really.
No. So... very, very concerning and alarming, dude.
Dude, I think we flogged this horse enough.
I don't know what else to say. Sour grapes. Yep. Wah, wah.
Dude, where do we want to go next?
Well, let's talk about Matt Irwin being called up today.
Okay.
So the Sharks have brought up defenseman Matt Irwin, mm-hmm, college free agent who's played 96 games at Worcester for the Sharks. This year, he has 7 goals, 16 points in 21 games, 6 power play goals. He's the fifth highest scoring defenseman in the AHL this year. So he's getting the call tonight.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to guess, he's not going to play tonight. but I bet you he plays in Colorado. And this is a shot across the bow, mm-hmm. I think, at Demers.
And Braun.
And Braun.
Oh, yeah.
Because neither of them have been able to contribute offensively or on the power play. And with, you know, six power play goals, you know, Matt Irwin is going to be given a shot here.
Yeah. Dude, oh, yeah.
Because they're replacing Murray, and I really thought this might be Nick Petrecki time here, mm-hmm. if they're looking for someone to replace Murray. But bringing up Matt Irwin, don't you think he's going to play? He's not just going to sit, right?
Yeah, I think he's going to play for exactly the reasons you said. I mean, he seems to be in a bit of a scoring hot streak, and the offensive defensemen in Demers and Braun are not playing all that great, and Petrecki isn't really a plug-in fit for either of those guys. So I think that's why we don't see Petrecki up. So Irwin, like you said, he's red hot, man. I mean, if he can give Braun and Demers a run for his money, then I say Godspeed, right? I mean, that's what we want.
You're looking for the best players right now.
Yes.
You know, you want guys who are going to be able to produce. Demers has been up and down, up and down. And Braun, you know, in his second stint here, has not done much of anything. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're looking for them to stand out. Matt Irwin, I fully expect is going to be given a shot, dude. So I hope they play him. And
oh, yeah. This
be interesting to see if he can kind of give them a little bit of a spark.
Yeah, no, whatever works, right, at this point.
Right.
Whatever works. I was just looking at Doug Murray's even strength numbers here. He's, in terms of even strength goals against per 60, which is sort of a defensive measure I like to look at, he's kind of middle of the pack. Boyle and Demers are clearly worse at this point. Colin White is up there in Dan Boyle territory.
How about Jim Vandermeer? Statistically, the best defenseman on the team.
Right. At even strength, statistically. Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, Justin Braun is pretty damn good.
So. Well, I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means either. At this point, we just throw some at the wall and see what sticks.
Dude, let's start talking about some good stuff.
Okay, good.
Because I think if anyone's even still listening,
right.
we've been negative Nancy's for most of the podcast, and with good reason. I think we're seeing it on the message boards and but talking to fans at the games and just friends who are fans. People are getting
antsy,
yeah. A little nervous. You know, we're expecting to see results. You can't put it on there's a bunch of new players on the team anymore because Florida and Philadelphia have a bunch of new players on their teams and they're doing pretty damn good.
In Minnesota.
So, yeah, Minnesota's, well, basically they brought up their minor league team. But
right.
That's not an excuse anymore. Not an excuse. So I want to take a look at some of our younger players, dude.
Okay.
You know, the Sharks, again, rating 30th out of 30 teams in NHL prospects. But here are some of the highlights. Matt Nieto, Boston University, mm-hmm. our second-round pick this year. He's the leading scorer for Boston with 8 goals, 8 assists, 16 points. He's outscoring Charlie Coyle, which has been kind of fun to see, plus 7. He's right now on path to be on the United States World Junior team along with Charlie Coyle.
Nice.
So that's pretty cool. So you can kind of keep an eye on him. Freddie Hamilton, a high scoring center with Niagara in the Ontario Hockey League. 43 points, plus 3 in 31 games. He's still hanging on to a Canadian World Junior appearance. So
okay.
I'm really hoping he's going to make that team. Michael Scarbosa, mm-hmm. who we signed as an undrafted free agent last year, is in the top 20 in scoring in the OHL with 36 points, and he's a plus 6. So having a good year at Sudbury. Nick Petrecki is Worcester's top defenseman, you know, in terms of even strength responsibility. You know, uh-huh. I mean, he's a plus player for the first time in his professional career. He's cut down on his penalty minutes. He's only got 25 mm-hmm. early on. You know, he was way into the hundreds, you know, in
right.
his other first two seasons. So it seems like Petrecki is finally progressing in terms of being a reliable, physical, shutdown defenseman. And the last player is Tyson Sexsmith, who's coming on huge this year for Worcester. 1.90 goals allowed, .928 save percentage. He's 8-3. And he's would be a candidate for one of the best goalies in the AHL this year. His stats match up with all the top guys like Mike Hackett and mm-hmm. and those players. So there are some bright spots in the shallow pool of prospects for the Sharks.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just wanted to throw those out there, dude. Yeah, which of those five players are you the most excited about?
I'm still excited about Nick Petrecki.
Yeah,
I'm so excited. I just
what's your timetable on his arrival?
He's got 2 years basically. He's got 2 years, not including this year. So next year and the year after, he has to make an impact at the NHL level, or he has missed his window in the mm-hmm. NHL, in mm-hmm. my opinion.
Yeah,
and it might even be smaller than that. It might be more like this year and next year.
Yeah, if I had to guess, I think in Doug Wilson's ghost roster, Petrecki is slotted in Colin White and Jim Vandermeer's spot next year. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he fits that role. He's the same type of player as those two guys.
Right.
So hopefully they're both on one-year deals. So you got to figure that the Petrecki, who I still want to see this year somewhere mm-hmm. Up here, you know, filling in, but they went with Matt Irwin instead this time.
All right, dude. I see you have some quarter awards, so should we go to that?
Sure, dude. Let's talk about it. I've got some questions for you. We got most surprising team. We've got most disappointing team.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest mirage.
Yeah.
We've got Sharks MVP at the quarter. Least valuable Shark at the quarter. And most surprising Shark at the quarter, dude. So let's start with most surprising team in the NHL. Who are you going with?
Clearly Florida. We didn't even draft Florida in our ill-fated draft that we had on the show. So clearly them going out and buying all the third liners they can find worked out somehow. Thomas Fleischmann and Steven Weiss and I can't remember the third top liner at the moment, but that's clearly an experiment that's working, although that might end up being the big mirage, but you have to stay tuned for that one. So Florida for me.
I'm going to go with the Flyers. I really, because I think Minnesota's an easy pick here. But the Flyers, I didn't think they were going to respond this positively to basically Carter and Richards being extracted from that team.
Mm-hmm.
I think that speaks mountains for maybe the negative impact they were having on that team.
Right.
They're gone and the young guys are rising up and really carrying them. Couturier's been outstanding for them. They've got an amazing future, you know, with Braden Schenn, Couturier, Giroux, JVR. They're looking good, not just now, but later. But Brizgalov not having a very good year.
Mm-hmm.
Under 90% save percentage. His goals allowed are creeping close to three.
Oh.
He's going to let them down at some point.
Probably.
That might be what spoils the milk in Philly. And how ugly is that going to get?
Oh, God.
If they have an amazing season and then in the first round they end up matched up with Buffalo and they lose in the first round.
They're going to want to bring Robert Esch in from the Swiss League.
Most disappointing team, dude.
Most disappointing team to me is, I guess Tampa Bay probably.
Yeah.
You know, they're, as a team that made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, I mean, they have a pitiful goal differential. They're well under 500. They're just giving up goals in bunches at this point. So, yeah, I don't know how whatever worked last year is no longer working. I mean, they have some great players, a lot of great players that I would love to have on our team, and somehow they're not finding a way to make that work at all. So, yeah, Tampa Bay, I think, is the big drop-off surprise of the season.
I'm going to go with the Washington Capitals. They've been pretty darn disappointing in terms of, you know, going in as, in our minds, the clear front runner,
mm-hmm.
a loaded, stacked team, all the great mojo, hugs and kisses, and now, you know, Boudreaux's been run out of town, and they're having to deal with a new coach, a new system, Semin continuing to, you know, be on the outs. Something is not right there. And I think it goes deeper than a coaching change.
Probably.
So the Capitals are pretty disappointing. How about, dude, the biggest mirage, the team that's doing well that you think is a phony baloney? They're the Milli Vanillis of hockey. Who are they?
We've talked about, I think, last week or the week before. I'm going to go Dallas here. Dallas is actually, they've given up more goals than they've scored, and yet they're leading the division somehow. Dallas cannot keep this up. We saw the Sharks managed to dominate in the first 2 minutes of the game, score two goals, then cough up the lead and tie the game, and then the Sharks managed to pull away a game which a lot of people will be happy at. I was really actually pretty disappointed with that overall game. I think once you're up 2-0 and you're dominating, getting them back to even up that's just dumb. You know, you just have to say, what on earth did we do to make that happen? And the fact that they managed to pull away 5-2 to me does not make up for that breakdown. But Dallas, I don't see anything great from Dallas. They have plenty of good players, and clearly they've managed to put something together. You know, obviously I hate Mike Ribeiro with a passion, but you know, their defense is fine. Their goaltending is not great, especially with Andrew Raycroft, and their offense is fine. And this is not a team that can win a division, so they're gonna slide.
I'd love to pick Minnesota here, but because they're playing a system, I think they're gonna hang on. You know, mm-hmm. I think they will hang on to a playoff spot. Toronto, I don't think so. I'm gonna say Toronto is the mirage right now. Right now would be slotted as a playoff team. Their negative goal differential, the 94 goals allowed.
Brutal.
That is just brutal. You know, that puts them in Carolina and Ottawa territory and Columbus as some of the worst defensive teams in the NHL. And with a team that has a lot of good defensemen on it, that's bad. You know, so I think Toronto will end up sliding at some point. Dude, Sharks MVP of the year so far is
Dan Boyle. No, I would love to say Dan Boyle. I want it to be Dan Boyle.
It hurts our heart.
It does hurt. It hurts quite a bit. I guess I'm gonna have. You know, I don't see one particular obvious front runner. If I had to pick one, I'd go Joe Pavelski because, you know, he's clearly at least at times he was, you know, was super hot and he's still on pace for, you know, a career high goal output. So I guess I got to go Joe Pavelski sort of by default, although I can't say anybody's really just broken out as much as I almost said Jamie McGinn, because I'm pretty happy with the way Jamie McGinn's playing.
Yeah,
but I can't go so far as to call him the MVP.
Right. It definitely had an impact. I'm going to say Jumbo because he's having statistically a very good year. Is the top 10 in takeaways, faceoff percentage, assists. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if they wouldn't keep screwing around with who his line mates are, mm-hmm. that he would continue to produce. But you can't ask him to work magic with McGinn and Winchester.
Right.
That's unreasonable, T-Mac.
You're right.
Unreasonable. Most disappointing Sharks so far.
Well, I'm going to try to avoid saying Dan Boyle here. I guess it wasn't a very high bar, but I really did expect more out of Andrew Murray. I expected Andrew Murray to be a lock on the fourth line and maybe contending for a defensive third line role. And he's sort of almost played himself out of the lineup at this point.
Yeah, Fraser McLaren has played for him the last two nights.
Right, so I'm going to have to go there. I mean, a lot of the team has been pretty disappointing. And again, it's not one... I wouldn't say one person other than Dan Boyle, which I don't want to say, has stood out in that department. So I'm going to have to go with Andrew Murray.
I'm going to go Michael Hontzius. Everyone knows why if you've been listening to the episode so far. Supposed to be the PK savior, and said he's been the PK lamer.
Right, good call.
Dude... most surprising Shark so far.
Most surprising Shark. Let's see. Where will I go with this? I'm going to go with Marc-Edouard Vlasic.
Yeah.
Because I thought he was sort of past surprising us, since he's such an NHL veteran at this point. We sort of knew what he was. And then all of a sudden, you know, and even since his massive breakout where he had, 7 points in 2 games or whatever that was, even since then I've seen increased offensive awareness and ability even since then, and maybe it hasn't shown up as much on the score sheet, but he's more dangerous now offensively than he's been in the last couple of years, and this is not what I would have expected from a guy that's been in the NHL for 6 years.
Right.
So I'm going to say that Marc-Edouard Vlasic is the nice surprise.
That is a good call. That was also my call, but to make it interesting, I'll say Jamie McGinn.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'll say James Shepherd.
Okay. you're surprised that he's skating?
Yeah, Jamie McGinn has played himself back into, I don't think he was ever in Todd McClellan's good graces, and now he's out there at important moments. He's scoring, he's got a little scoring touch, he's being physical, he rocked Matt D'Agostini last night, I did enjoy that. He's a dangerous physical presence out there, and he's taking steps towards being... you know, a good third line player. Now, the fact that he doesn't see a wisp of penalty kill time tells you that the coaching staff has zero confidence in him in that role. and we're still looking for that player. We need our Max Talbot. Who is that player? We don't have him right now. And I think until the Sharks can get that guy, there, nothing's changed, unfortunately.
Yep.
Dude. Chicago, the puck will be dropping in an hour. Predictions on the game, since everyone will be listening to it. Afterwards, no pressure.
Oh, man, Chicago. I think we lose against Chicago. I'm not seeing good things. I think they were pretty successful in shutting us down last game. I don't see how the Sharks going on this sort of bad run is going to help any matters for the Sharks, especially losing to a less capable St. Louis Blues team last night, and then they have to go to Chicago today. I think all the deck is sort of stacked against the Sharks. Of course, now they're going to win 6-0, but I'm still going to say that I expect a very similar game to what we saw in St. Louis and what we saw against Chicago previously.
Since it's such a great opportunity to make us look the fool.
Right.
I'm going to say the Sharks kill all 8 of the penalties they take. They score 5 power play goals. Hanzus is the hero. Niemi pitches a no-hitter.
Right.
You know, Jamie McGinn gets a safety.
Yeah.
Every sporting score that you can get,
yeah,
you'll get it. I don't have a good feeling about tonight's game at all. Like, I think the Sharks are skidding in the wrong direction, and going from St. Louis to Chicago that's going to be a tough game to gear up for, I think.
Yeah.
You know, after kind of losing a disappointing one last night. So
see. And you hate Patrick Kane.
Oh, man, that mulleted midget. I can't stand him. I can't wait to scream at the television here. We got an email here, dude, before we go.
Are we going to talk about this, dude?
Yep.
This is an email from Shark Circle, which is another podcast. I know this is the genesis of the Matt D'Agostini comment. I don't know how far in depth we want to get here.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I don't know if we want to go here, but...
this is your call.
I mean, we got the email. Aren't we sort of like obliged to read at least part of it or to address it on the air?
If you'd like.
I guess we should. Basically, the person asked if we could be added to the blog roll.
This is the blog that basically scolded us, right?
Yes. For Matt D'Agostini and getting his contract
right,
wrong.
Right, okay.
Which we did get wrong.
We did get that wrong.
We got it wrong. Even knowing that, I'm going to decline.
This is an attempt to make the peace?
I think so. I don't know this person at all. Obviously, this is only in the wild world of the internets. But we certainly suspect this person has trolled our blog in the past, represented different people at different places. I don't know that's true. I certainly suspect it.
I'm pretty confident in saying that this is Evil Doug.
Yeah, it's pretty likely. It's also likely that this person may have several different identities in our fantasy leagues. All those kinds of shenanigans, I realize, are sort of par for the course for the internet. Doesn't make me that happy to link to a person's blog that engages in those kinds of shenanigans. So I think I'm going to decline. No hard feelings. If you want to read that blog, it's not going to hurt my feelings. But I guess you're going to have to find your own way there. Good enough?
Well said.
Okay. I think we should leave it there. Dude, this has been a little bit longer podcast. But
40 minutes of disappointment.
Well, hopefully we'll have some exciting and fun things to talk about next week, dude, as we get closer to the holidays, and maybe the Sharks will find some early Christmas presents and be able to win some games here.
Outstanding.
All right, dude, I will talk to you next week.
Here's hoping.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.